Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Worldwide. Podcasting since 2005. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Back on the scene. With your host, yeah. Podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go. Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 609. I'm Paris, and this week I'm joined by Pete.
What up?
No Danny this week.
Yes.
He is allegedly in the swamp fighting crime with Swamp Thing and Gentle Ben or something like that. But really, he's just sitting in a Walmart parking lot pretending that he's camping. Yeah. So, Danny, that's for you because you sent me a nasty message this morning. I didn't like it. So, whatever. But Pete, what's going on? How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. It's been an interesting weekend. Let's just put it that way. It's been an interesting weekend.
Right on. Well, yeah, I took a little trip this week. I went up to San Francisco. I already talked about it. I went to YouTube, but I also got to see Watch Dogs 2 again. I actually got some extended time playing it. So we'll play an interview that I did while I was up there, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the game after that. But before we get into anything, remind you guys, go check out our website, gamertagradio.com. You can also find us over at play.it. And Danny, go ahead and play it. Let everybody know where they can send us feedback.
Send us your feedback or questions. Yep. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Thank you for that, Danny. I hope your internet's working well from the Everglades. Probably not because you're at Walmart. But like I said, we got this interview coming up. But before we get into any of that, Pete, let's get a word from our sponsor.
All right. So before we go any further, just want to give a quick shout out to the good folks over at Mack Weldon. They've always been a good supporter of the Gamertag Radio podcast. So really appreciative. Go check them out if you're in the mood or if you're trying to express your individuality. I know I do it all the time with crazy, wacky socks. I know people are always talking to me about my socks. It's kind of like my icebreaker with things. And I've said it before. I love their socks. I love their clothes, their t-shirt. I'm actually wearing it right now. And one of the cool things about their shirts is their new line has silver woven into it. And it won't protect you from werewolves. And it won't protect you from vampires, but it actually does protect you from odor. And I know that sounds weird, but silver has an innate ability to actually be a natural antimicrobial product. So what Mack Weldon has done is they've actually taken silver and woven it into their clothing, their shirts. And so you won't be that smelly, dirty console peasant. You can actually hang with the PC Master Race folks like Paris and myself, and you won't have the stench of the dirty console on you. So if you're looking for clothes that are not just comfortable, but they look good and they help eliminate odor, go on over to MackWeldon.com. You put in the promo code GAMERTAG and you're going to get 20% off your purchase. That's MackWeldon.com. Enter the promo code GAMERTAG and you'll get 20% off your order.
And thank you for that, Pete. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to play an interview I did earlier, or actually last week when you guys are hearing this, in San Francisco. Like I said, I was at Watch Dogs 2 preview event. Got to sit down with the game for an extended period of time. And after I was done playing, I sat down with Thomas and Violet, and we talked about hacking, cybercrime, and how that correlates into the real world today, which ironically enough, we had a DDoS attack over the weekend, and how it correlates into the game as well. So let's go ahead and play that interview, and we'll be right back.
Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, this is Paris. I'm here at the Watch Dogs 2 preview event, and you guys already know everything about the game, but one very important aspect of Watch Dogs 2 is hacking and cybercrime. So I got a couple people here to talk about that. So can you please introduce yourself?
So my name is Tomaszew Ho. I'm the content director for Watch Dogs, and I'm also the first line of hacking answerer within the team.
I'm Violet Blue. I'm an author of A Guide to Digital Privacy. I'm also a journalist on hacking and cybercrime, and I'm a consultant for Watch Dogs 2 on hacker history, San Francisco, because I'm a San Francisco native, and also hacker culture globally.
Well, thank you both for joining me. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me about the game. So I actually have a background in network security. That's my day job. So the fact that this game is all about cybercrime and hacking is right up my alley. So actually, Violet, I think I want to start with you. Can you kind of talk about your background and what got you involved with the game?
Well, I grew up here in the Bay Area. I grew up here in San Francisco specifically, and grew up in computer and hacking culture. My mother was an engineer from Stanford, worked in Silicon Valley. When I was a kid, we always had computers around the house. And I just grew up in the art and hacking culture of San Francisco, which has ended up transitioning into my day job, which is being a reporter on hacking and cybercrime. And I have the good fortune to be in and part of and very well connected with a lot of different hacker communities, so that in my day job when I'm reporting, I can, you know, when I know what I don't know about something, I can find someone that knows the area of expertise. And that has also transitioned into me traveling around the world and covering hacking conferences literally all over the world. And I've had the great benefit of getting to know as many types of hackers and hacker cultures as I possibly can. And so that's really informed my conversations with Ubisoft, and helped them sort of, you know, demystify, you know, what the impressions of hackers are in pop culture, which are really, really crazy and usually really wrong, versus the reality, which is the richness, the diversity, the subversiveness, the playfulness, but also just all of the different motivations that hackers have as well. So
I want to circle back to that, but I want to talk about the game really quick. So Thomas, can you tell me, like, you had a presentation before we got to sit down with the game, and you talked about the hacking, about we're simplifying it because you're just hitting the X button. But can you kind of go into detail why that is? What's behind the X button that makes it so important to the gamer to simplify it?
Because the act of hacking is very complicated, and we cannot ask the gamers to learn Python and to code shells while they're, you know, toting a gun or hacking something. So to us, it was more important to describe and play with the effects of the hacks than the hacks themselves. So we work with Violet and different consultants just to make sure that the hacks are feasible and exist in real life. However, we don't have the luxury to spend time detailing how it's happening, because it's almost irrelevant for what we're doing. We're making games. We want people to have fun, but we want to make sure that everything we do will be accurate, skipping the complicated part. We tried to have a special edition with a guide to hack of 17,000 pages, but it was a bad idea. Also because Adderall was not available at the time.
Now, staying on the line with the hacks, again, we're hitting the X button to make it simple, but can you talk about some of the variety of the different things that we'll be able to do in the game as far as hacking goes?
Oh, yes. I think it's an extension of what we did in the first game. We're just adding more ingredients. The idea for us of playing those hacks is basically to be creative about them and play with the system of the game. So while we cannot get into the technical part of the hack, what we want people is to experience what it is to understand systems, play with them, find breaches, find flaws, and we hope people will break the game using the tools we provide them and hack the game itself through the tools we provide.
Now, the group that your character is going to be a part of, Marcus is his name, that we'll be a part of in the game, is called DedSec. Can you kind of talk about them a little bit and what some of their motivations are in the game?
Yes, we introduced DedSec in Watch Dogs 1, actually. We introduced them in Watch Dogs 1, and they were the one providing the tools for Aiden to act revenge. But we wanted to expand on that because for many different reasons, in fact. The first one was that the visuals of the team, and people were fascinated by them, by the visuals, about the elements into that. And also because hacking is so wide and there's so much diversity, just like Violet was saying, about the point of views about hacking and the way you expose hacking can be so diverse. And to us, it was really important to go through a group because we could provide different point of views. We could provide a dialogue between the characters about what the, the element they're looking forward. So obviously we were inspired by current as activists, some kind of a mix between Telecomics, who is a well-known hacktivist group in Europe, and Anonymous for the laws. And we worked with an anthropologue, An anthropologist called Gabriella Coleman, who is a specialist of Anonymous, who happens to be working in Montreal. So she helped us a lot at the beginning of the project to narrow down who DedSec was, and especially the jester element of DedSec, how they are clowning around, but for very serious purposes. So DedSec is in San Francisco, and Marcus will join them because he felt betrayed. And by coming into the group and discovering what they will discovering about the world and the tech behind that, they will go from the lulls to something a little more serious and a little more socially focused. So this is the journey we wanted to have, because many of those hacktivists have had this journey themselves. They started hacking, and they started toying around just because you can do it, which is sometimes the best, you know, the better motivation you can have, and turn into something a little more relevant for the society. And that's exactly what you'll be experiencing in the game playing DedSec.
Now, going back to the original thing that you were talking about, just some of the hacking communities and everything, more real life, obviously not the game. Can you get into the motivations of why these groups would come about? Again, like I said, my background is I do network security. I specialize more in perimeter defense. So my thing is detection, you know, when you're coming in at the border. But the perception of hackers is they're always bad guys, right? It's the bad guys. They're just trying to steal your information, and they're just trying to do nefarious things. But, you know, with your background, can you kind of go into the history of why some of these groups came about, and even today here in 2016, why they're still relevant?
Absolutely. One of the earliest groups that were meeting locally here in Silicon Valley was the Homebrew Computer Club, and that was 1975. They were a group of all genders and all colors who came together basically just because they were kind of hobbyists. Some businesses came out of it as well, but they were a group that just wanted to share what they were doing, whether it was hardware hacking or phone line hacking or anything like that. And this was sort of right around the time that the zeitgeist was starting to hit of people coming together and creating hacker groups. So one of the earliest ones was in 1981. That was the Chaos Computer Club in Germany. And this was a group, again, of hackers that were coming together to just share ideas and, you know, swap recipes and see, you know, and everyone coming from different skill levels and skill sets and finding community. And then also, you know, doing things like finding exploits together and things like that, trying to raise awareness about those exploits, finding out that they were treated like criminals when they would try to raise awareness about them. And this, you know, this transitioned into a lot of hacking groups starting to form all around the world for different reasons. Some were more socially focused, like CCC and Loft, which was 1992 here in the United States. And they were more interested in, well, I wouldn't say more interested, but one of their main goals was to raise awareness about the security dangers of the modern world. So they were much more socially focused. But other groups came together, and they were not as socially focused. They would do it for different reasons, for the lulls, or, you know, just to be jerks. People who genuinely didn't want to save the world or didn't care about saving the world and just wanted to have some fun. And also, you know, just people who like to break things. So that's where you get stuff like the Cult of the Dead Cow and Legion of Doom and things like that. And these groups would fight. There would be warring factions and things like that. And then it, you know, the group started to transition into having physical hacker spaces. So through the 90s, there were physical hacker spaces in Germany where they were the first ones where people could just show up and actually meet other hackers. You didn't have to know, you know, where to find people. You could go to a location. This came over to the United States and has spread around the world. So now there's like basically a global hacker spaces network, which is really fascinating. And then commerce introduced itself into hacking as well, which then split groups and factions into areas of commerce. So, you know, there will be groups who then form their own businesses, you know, people who do, you know, exploit sales as a business and things like that. So the groups are very varied. What's really nice about the group in Watch Dogs 2 is that it's very reflective of the urban hacker group. You know, this is what happens here in San Francisco. These are the people I meet when I go to DEF CON. You know, I know these guys, you know, and I know these crews, and there are a lot of crews like this. And they all do different stuff for different reasons, but a lot of it is community. A good amount of it is also location-based. Like, there's a lot of the crews, there are a couple California crews that just go by area code. you know? So, and that's, and they, you know, they get the area code tattooed, like they're serious. And they have their own spaces. Those are private spaces, but there's still a community there, you know, and they still deal with their issues and the issues of their communities. And it's subcultures within subcultures.
Thomas, going back to the game itself, again, just talking about some of the characters that you'll be interacting with, how important was it to actually reflect real life? This is how a hacker group would operate.
I think to us, it's not only the group, it's everything we do in the game and the way we try to portray hacking and the hacking community. It's paramount to us to reflect something real. One of the objectives or secondary objective we have with Watch Dogs is in a way to raise awareness or just to expose the reality of technology. And there are usually some very complicated topics. I mean, we're back to press X to hack, but those topics are so complicated that people tend not to care. And by making a game, which is fun, which is entertaining, we've realized that if we put the time and efforts into it, into simplifying those complex issues and give them to the players, we can have a positive effect. They can start thinking about what's happening in the real world. So we have to be very accurate about how we depict the city, how we depict the people, how we depict the hacking culture, because it has to be true. If you want people to ask themselves questions about their digital life, it has to be rooted in reality. And to us, it was paramount. Also because we love hacker, we love the hacking community, and we feel it's super important to have them represented the way they are, because they are the Robin Hood of the days. I mean, we no longer trust, or we have a limited trust in our governments to protect us from misbehavior with data. We don't really trust the big companies to do that. So hackers have become a key element for our society and technological societies to protect us from everything. And we take it almost as a duty as watchdogs to say, look at those guys, they're going to help us. And you need to take care of them and need to listen to them as we do to create those games.
Now, final question for me, Marcus, being the main character, he's an African-American hacker from Oakland. Was this a conscious decision to have this type of diverse character be your main character in the game?
Yes. In fact, yes and no. One thing is, we're in 2016. I think he could be anyone. It could be any gender. But also to us, it was important to reflect this diversity of the hacking community, which has been very tolerant and very welcoming to everyone throughout its history. And we try to be inspired by the hacking community and their ethos and everything around. So to us, it was important to reflect that also.
Well, Thomas, Violet, thank you for taking the time to talk to me about Watch Dogs. So can you remind everyone listening, it's coming to PlayStation 4, it's coming to Xbox, it's coming to PC, but when will Watch Dogs 2, release?
So Watch Dogs 2 will be released the 15th of November on PS4 and Xbox One, compatible with PS4 Pro. And I think the PC version is released the 29th of the same month of November.
That's good. You mentioned the PS4 Pro. I don't know, just one bonus question. Is there any features or anything that Watch Dogs 2 is going to be taking advantage of that you can talk about right now on the PS4 Pro?
I can say it looks gorgeous.
That's good. Well, again, thank you both. I really appreciate the time.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, I want to thank Thomas and Violet. I had a great time talking to them, and ironically enough, I was talking to Violet after the interview as well, and we talked about her book, which is called The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy, a privacy guide for the rest of us. It's geared more towards, from the female perspective, living in today's world of social media and just the internet in general, and how to protect yourself with privacy. It was a great conversation, and I was joking to Danny and Pete that I should have recorded it. Like, literally, we talked for an extended period of time, and I looked at it, and I was like, gosh darn it, I should have recorded this, and I didn't. But, you know, go to Amazon. You can, like I said, her name's Violet Blue, and the name of the book is called The Smart Girl's Guide to Privacy. I'm definitely going to pick it up myself and check it out, because it was a great extended conversation with her talking about that. So hope you guys enjoyed that interview. Like I said, I got to sit down with Watch Dogs 2 for about 3 hours, and I got to play it from the beginning, and then I actually got to skip ahead more towards the end to some more advanced stuff. But I got to see the game, how you started off from, you know, from all the tutorial stuff, some of the early things that you'll do in the game, you know, with driving and getting some of your initial hacking abilities, just the word I'm looking for here, the skill tree, so that you can pick what type of hacking you want to do early on as you're building up and all that. And, you know, San Francisco, it's amazing what they've done to be able to recreate that world, because not only are you in San Francisco proper, you can go down to Silicon Valley, and you can also go over to Oakland as well. And it is fully realized. And it was funny because we were at the old Mint Bank downtown in San Francisco, and I literally drove right by it in the game. And it was just a perfect recreation of what we saw. And I'm really liking that it is truly a living, breathing world. And you're just introducing all your hacking techniques mm-hmm. into it. Some of the various missions that you'll be able to get. Like you said, you're part of a DedSec now, and they send you on various things. There's a lot of side mission stuff that I saw that, you know, in 3 hours been impossible to get a hold of. But graphically, we played on the PlayStation 4. And if you notice with Thomas, he brought up the Pro. I tried to get more information out of him about PS4 Pro, but, you know, just it looks good. So I guess we'll have to wait and see on November 15th with that. But it looked fantastic on PlayStation 4, you know, frame rate rise. I didn't have any issues at all. I mean, it was very smooth experience, a lot of fun. I unfortunately didn't get to do any of the multiplayer stuff. At one point, actually, I take that back. At one point, someone infiltrated my world and I went to go try and find them, and then they left. Yeah. So I never got to interact with that at all. But I know some of the other people at the event did get to do that, and they said it was a lot of fun as well. So the advice I'd give anyone right now, just having seen the game a couple times now, if you're a fan of Grand Theft Auto 5, you're going to be interested in this game. This is literally Ubisoft's answer to what Rockstar is doing with the Grand Theft Auto world. Because, I mean, like I said, the city is fully realized, completely open world, do whatever you want, when you want, but you also get to throw the hacking stuff in there as well. You know, and I talked about that previously, how fun that was, because I got to see the full suite of hacking, you know, from the high end. And then this time I got to see it from the low end. And it was funny because a lot of the cool stuff that I was able to do the first time I played the game, I wasn't able to do yet, you know. But I went on a couple missions where it involved hacking, where it involved me taking my little rover in and then, you know, having to disable some locks and then sneak in the other way and distracting guards and things like that. And then actually having to get away. Like, I won't spoil anything, but there's one nod to an old 80s television show that I think you guys will really like. And involves a car and a chase. And that was pretty fun. Yeah. But Pete, any questions you got?
So I know from having, you know, gotten a hands-on time over at E3 that they try to emphasize being able to have that freedom similar to the GTAs of the world. And there's three different types of players. There's the all guns aggressor, I think it is. There's the trickster, and then there's the ghost. Which one did you like the best?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So when you're
let me say this. Okay. When you're talking about the character that I'm playing as?
No, well, so Marcus, I believe, is the name of the main player.
Yes.
So you can play three different ways. And I remember this from E3 because it was really cool that the way they broke them out. You can call them game styles. One, you can play the aggressor where you're always going in with guns blazing and just shooting and essentially bullying your way through everything, or as it happened this week, you know, that you DDoS your way in, right? There's the ghost where you're playing from a distance. They never see you or hear you, but you're using other things to make sure that, you know, that allow you to get across, you know, that lets you get to your end goal. And then there's the trickster, who's the AKA techno agent of chaos. And the trickster does things kind of like, I'll send in the drone to zap people and take them out. So like you can use, what is it? Like you can call the cops in to have the cops take care of all of the business for you while you go in through the back way and steal whatever intel or whatever it is you're doing as DedSec. So I was just wondering how you played it, like which way did you play it?
And they're not emphasizing that anymore, by the way, because that did not come up in either preview event that they were saying specific play styles, because they're emphasizing play how you want.
Right.
You can do whatever you want when you want. And to be honest with you, you were talking about that aggressive style. That's going to get you killed, period. you're not. I mean, especially early on, maybe when it gets more advanced and you have more weapons and more hacking tools, you can be a little more aggressive. But I didn't see anything early in, because obviously they're trying to teach you the various things that you can do early in the game. But like there was one specific mission that I was on where, yeah, I did have to play as the ghost, you know, from a distance. And then you get slightly aggressive in one part where I got caught and I kind of had to force my way out. But there was no way I was going to play that style 100% of the time. Like if I tried this one mission I was on, if I tried to just guns blazing, bum rush my way in, I'd have been dead in 5 seconds. You know what I mean? So I think maybe they were saying that back at E3 and was kind of talking about that. But just from what I've seen of the game, you know, it's going to emphasize you having to do all three of those styles, so to speak. There's no way you're going to be able to sit back from a distance the entire time. Like there was, like I said, there was one mission where I had to take the rover in to do things from a distance to get some doors unlocked, but it was going to also force me to actually physically go into that building at one point. There's no way the rover was going to be able to do everything on its own.
Right.
So in that sense, I had to play two different styles just to get the objective done. There's no way I could do one. So in my opinion, from what I've seen, you know, it's not going to be a Deus Ex where you can do that, where you can just play one style and get everything done. It's going to, at certain points in the game, not force you, but highly suggest that you do certain things.
Familiarize yourself with multiple styles. So you're not just
exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Exactly. But like I said, overall, I have a very positive experience from the game. Like I said, I did not play Watch Dogs 1. I've only gone by word of mouth with that. But from what people were even saying at the event, I mean, I'm talking actual developers of the game were even saying kind of off the record that, oh, yeah, we know what we messed up on with the first game. And this is a huge improvement from that. And I know people that I was hanging out with that have played Watch Dogs 1. They were saying that themselves, that this is a huge improvement over that original game. So, yeah. Trust me, I'm interested for November 15th. I'll definitely be checking this out. I'll definitely be giving it a spin because, like I said, 3 hours I got to play, I was having fun. And, I mean, that's the name of the game, right? If you're having fun, yep, then, you know, I definitely want to play some more of it. Cool. All right. So with that, I think we should go ahead and go into our fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right. So right off the top, we got a couple voicemails. So I know we got one from Mike from the UK. So let's go ahead and play that one right now.
Hi, Gamertag Radio. This is Mike, a.k.a. Trashback, calling from the UK. And I wondered if I could hear your thoughts on Red Dead Redemption 2 and the release window. They've teased that the game's coming fall 2017. So we're in October now, 2016, and so that's over a year, or around a year, to wait for the game. And it got me thinking, since Fallout 4 announced and released within a short amount of time, I think it was 3 or 4 months, why aren't other developers adopting the same sort of strategy when, as far as I've heard, all gamers and reviewers alike seem to have much preferred the short announcement window because, you know, you're not sat around listening to the same old news, watching the same game previews and demos over and over again. There's an announcement. The gamers have got enough time to get hyped about it, and then the game's in their hands. Great, done. No delays, no overexposure. We get the announcement and we get the game. Great, I love it. So why is Rockstar now announcing the game a year away? I mean, marketing, yeah, I can see that, but a game like Red Dead doesn't really need a huge marketing push. I mean, word of mouth within the gaming community is going to do that. And if you do think marketing is the answer, then why didn't Bethesda need a year marketing push for Fallout 4? I just found it interesting. And also, as a gamer, looking forward to Red Dead, a little bit frustrating that I've now got to wait a year. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, guys. Keep up the good work. Paris, keep pumping those guns. Danny, you keep dreaming. Pete, you just keep being a legend, guy. See ya. Bye.
All right, Mike, thank you for that voicemail. Really appreciate it. I know you tweet at us a lot, too, and you've been sending us other emails and things. We appreciate all the feedback. And like he's saying, you know, he wants to know, we talked about this a little bit last episode, why aren't more publishers doing what Bethesda did with Fallout 4? And just when the game is ready, go ahead and announce it. And then the game's out, what, like 3-4 months later, instead of like what we saw with Red Dead, where they kind of hyped it up a little bit here last week, and then they put out the 60-second teaser, and then it's probably going to be crickets until like next spring or even next E3. I honestly still don't feel like Rockstar had to say anything. Now, I know on the business side, it kind of boosted up their stock a little bit. Maybe they were trying to get that in before the last, you know, fiscal quarter, you know, quarter going into fiscal year or whatever. But, I don't know. I would like to see more people do what Bethesda did and just, hey, the game's ready. Now we're going to show you everything about it. Do a few interviews, wait a couple months, and the game's out. So what do you think, Pete?
Rockstar, obviously, and I think we started touching on this last show. They do things differently. I mean, if you go back to GTA 5, that was originally announced October of 2011, and the game didn't come out until September 2013. So you've got 2 full years of marketing hype and build up for a game that performed. I mean, it's exactly what people wanted. And if you can somewhat say the same about what Bethesda did, would you say that Fallout 4 was as much of a success as GTA 5?
I would say for what Fallout 4 is, mm-hmm. and comparing it to the previous games, it was a smash hit. Okay. I mean, it was one of the top selling games of 2015. So I think, and again, I don't think if they would announce Fallout 4 in 2014 would have changed sales dramatically. Right. You know what I mean?
I agree.
The fact that they only announced it, you know, at the E3 before, showed it off, and then it came out, I think it got as many sales as it would have if it was announced previously. Again, in general, I just think publishers should just wait until the games are ready. Now, look, I understand new IPs that people know nothing about. Maybe, yeah, you want to get the hype train going a little bit more because you want to make people aware. You want to have some preview events, show it off so you can generate that interest, right? When we get into sequel territory, like did Uncharted 4 need any hype on it? No, it's Uncharted 4. You're going to run out and go get it. Titanfall 2. We know what Titanfall 2 is. You're going to go get it. Call of Duty, etc. We know what these franchises are at this point. They don't need this long run up to get us interested in the game. You already got us. Right. You know what I mean? You already know what your projected sales are going to be. And for the casual person that knows nothing about it, I mean, if anything, to get that condensed buzz, like, oh my God, this game is coming out in 2 months and there's all this media about it in a condensed period. I think that is more effective than this long drawn out thing. Like you said, GTA 5, 2 years before it actually came out and people are talking about and waiting on it. When is it coming out? When is it coming out? I think that does more harm than good, if anything, where people eventually just get disinterested, right? Because it's like, God, you keep talking about this game and it ain't out. Man, I'm moving on to something else.
Vaporware.
I'm not waiting around for this. Exactly.
Vaporware.
Well, you know, a game like the Red Deads or the Grand Theft Autos or the Fallout 4s, they're not going to end up being vapor. Once the company's officially announced that it's out, it's going to be, it's coming out. I think what helped in Bethesda's corner was the fact that it was already ready to go. It was damn near gold by the time they announced that at E3, caught everybody by surprise. And like you said, it was, you know, a shorter condensed period. Whereas GTA 5, that 2 year release, that 2 year announcement to release window was for console only. You have to take into consideration, it wasn't for another year, I believe, that or a year and change that PC actually got their release later on. So I don't know. It's, again, it goes back to the company and how they specifically have their marketing strategy or marketing plan. That's going to dictate how they're going to do it. Bethesda has one way. Rockstar has another. Apparently both are successful because, you know, they're both rolling in money right about now. So I don't know. I guess it just depends on it's just personal preference at this point. I really don't mind. Although I will say that I don't want to have, you know, I think 2 years might be a little much in the way of marketing, especially in today's society where, you know, everybody's glued to a screen whether it's a 5-inch, a 10-inch, or, you know, a 65-inch, you know, that at that point in this, you know, in this era, that could be a little much in the form of maybe over advertising and getting people sick of it. So it's up to both. It's up to the marketing company, and we'll never get what we truly want. Right.
No, agreed. And you know, this actually will lead into another voicemail. So I want to talk about Crackdown 3. So Danny, go ahead and play that other voicemail we got.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Ben Corona LP. That's my gamer tag and PlayStation Network ID. Caps on LP. Second time caller. Haven't called in after my first call in quite a while because got a lot of good questions coming in from so many other people that I get kind of beat to it. I do have a question, and I hope I don't lose anybody here, with regards to the future of Xbox. You know, Sony has a PS4 Pro. They're extending this generation. They want to maintain their lead, and Microsoft saying, screw this, we're just going next-gen with the Scorpio next year, or Scorpion, as Paris keeps calling it. My question is, the Play Anywhere thing, how's that going to work? Do you think that, for example, third parties, let's say Activision with Call of Duty, let's say EA with, I don't know, another Battlefield, do you think, and I know you guys touched on the whole EA with their Origin thing on PC, but what about consoles specifically? Do you think they'll release a copy, for example, of said franchises that are big sellers on Xbox One and then allow for a much more enhanced version, say the console-lized Ultra Settings edition of these games, to be digitally downloadable on Scorpio? Or do you think, which is most likely the case, that they'll release a full physical separate release for Scorpio? Because we know how Sony with PS4 Pro, they mandate that if you're taking advantage of the Pro, you also got to have the game run on the standard PS4s. That's not what Microsoft's doing here. They're giving publishers and developers the option. You want to take advantage of Scorpio for 1080p, you want to enhance any Xbox One game, that you know, they're all going to work on Scorpio anyway. You know, for example, another thing is Crackdown when it comes to Microsoft specifically. You notice we're not seeing that game anymore, and I think this is one of those games that's been pushed off to be a launch title for Scorpio next November, if all rumors are true about the release date. I think the game was going to really run crappy. It's going to have too much effect, even for Xbox One, even for the slightly beefed up S, which has a slightly faster GPU on it. I think Scorpio is the perfect place to launch the title, have a launch title that is exclusive to the platform and run 4K, maybe 60 hertz with all these effects because it's such a more powerful console. But because it's also a Microsoft game, I still don't think that it's going to also be released on Xbox One and be Play Anywhere. I think it's going to be Play Anywhere on PC and Scorpio. And it's going to show that, yeah, Microsoft's moving on. And, oh, by the way, bring all your old games with you over to the Scorpio. But what about these third parties? Do you think they'll do what they have to do on Sony, produce two versions, buy the Xbox One version, get the enhanced version on running higher on Scorpio? Or do you think, like an EA would say, screw that?
All right. So, again, thank you for the voicemail. Really appreciate it. You touched on a lot of things here with Xbox Anywhere and, you know, just third party and all that. But I want to touch on what he talked about with Crackdown 3, which actually goes back to the previous email, what we're talking about. I mean, they've been talking about Crackdown 3 at this point for, what, 2.5 years, something like that. And I mean, we all pretty much agree it's been delayed at this point for Project Scorpio. It's going to be a launch game for that. Right.
Yeah.
Again, they probably, when they first started talking about Crackdown, had no plans to come out with this Project Scorpio. So I understand it's a little different, but this is another case of fatigue. I'm sick of hearing about Crackdown. You know what I mean? I know they kind of didn't talk about it at all at this E3, but it kept coming up in interview questions because people wanted to know, why weren't you talking about Crackdown? So they've been doing that dance of dodging around it because they don't want to really reveal that, hey, we actually delayed it because we wanted to be a launch game on the Scorpion. You know, and they're not going to say that, but that's, you know, in reality, that's probably what it is.
But are they, but are they really heavily marketing Crackdown 3? You don't
they
really.
They were a year ago. That's my point.
But that's not really the, you're not seeing like the,
No, yes, they were, because I can even give you a perfect example. The Xbox MVPs, they got them all involved with the multiplayer. Remember that beta was supposed to come? They were heavily talking about that a year ago. A year ago this time, Crackdown 3 was a big topic up in Redmond, and now it's crickets because, you know, they've delayed it for certain reasons. I get it, but that's my point. Stop talking about all these games until they're ready to come out, because that, to me, it gets me disinterested. Like, I really don't have that interest in Crackdown 3 right now that I had previously, because it's fatigue. I've moved on to other things.
Interesting.
But that's just me. But going in his voicemail, what he's actually, all the stuff that he's talking about, because there's a lot here. Like, when he brought up Crackdown, he's talking about with Play Anywhere, And correct me if I'm wrong, he's basically saying that Play Anywhere will be for Scorpio and the PC, but it won't be for Xbox One. I highly disagree with that. And this, here's why. They're saying that no one gets left behind.
Right.
So you're going to have forwards and backwards compatibility. So if I have an Xbox One, any game that launches next holiday will be, and I'm doing air quotes here, will be playable on Xbox One. Will it be as good as it's going to be on Project Scorpio? No. Will it be as good as it's going to be on the PC? No. But it will be playable. So they're not going to leave people behind when it comes to that. Xbox and Sony, for that matter, are going to one platform at this point. Your hardware doesn't matter. Whether you be on Xbox One, on the Scorpio, on PC, or on the Sony side, whether you be on PlayStation 4 or on PlayStation 4 Pro, all your games will work. That's the point of their making. Mm-hmm. I just, and like I've said previously, I feel like Microsoft, like, let's not get it twisted here, Project Scorpio is the next Xbox. They're going full on next gen, but they're also going to have it so that their older games will work on that system. They just won't work as well as the newer games that come out. And that's just something that you'll have to deal with and have to understand. You know what I mean? Because they're moving on. PlayStation 4 Pro is that half measure where we're going to do some checkerboard rendering. You know, we're really using the same hardware. We're just putting a second GPU in, kind of bumping up the memory speed, the CPU clock speed, things like that. But really, it's still the same console. It's just now we can kind of display that stuff at 2160p. You know, how we get there under the hood, don't worry about it. Don't look at the man over there in the corner behind the curtain. It doesn't matter, right? That's what they're saying. Whereas Microsoft is saying, no, we're coming with a full on, you know, monster rig that's going to push it into true 4K, and we're going from there. And like I said before, they're technically already giving you a preview on this. If you played Gears of War 4 on the PC, you've just seen Project Scorpio. That's what it is. That's exactly what they're doing. If you have a high-end PC that can push Gears 4 at 4K, that's what Scorpio is going to be. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of hogging it, talking too much. So, I mean, what are your overall thoughts on his voicemail? What do you think?
I don't agree with, like you said, when Phil said, we're not leaving anybody behind. I can't see how they're going to segment or fracture the fan base by trying to say, no, you're going to have separate or full releases for Scorpio and maybe a potential trimmed down version for Xbox One S. I don't think it makes sense, because now you're putting the onus and all the additional work on the developers to try to develop for multiple SKUs. And it just doesn't make sense to try and fracture. And it's just not something that makes viable sense. Just in my personal opinion, and we've said it before, we've visually experienced this with Gears of War 4. That's exactly what people want, is the ability to play together regardless of the ecosystem or regardless of the device. Whether we'll ever actually get that between Sony and PlayStation or Sony and Microsoft, that's a totally different question, probably for another time. While I would love it, I would love to be able to play Overwatch on PC against somebody on Xbox or PlayStation, even if it was from a horde mode perspective, let's say, if I could play that against the other ones, that'd be fantastic. But I don't think having separate releases, and I don't think third parties will do that ever either. I just don't think it makes sense from a business standpoint. from a consumer slash gamer perspective, I would love for them to do that. I just don't think that that's in the cards for us, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we've talked about this previously. I just, again, the EAs of the world, they're not going to jump in on this whole third-party bandwagon. Because, like, you know, he was saying, would we see Play Anywhere across the spectrum of Xbox One, Scorpio, and PC for third-party? I think some of the smaller things, like what's that one game? We Happy Few.
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. We Happy
That's
Few.
A third party. That's a third party game that will do Xbox Anywhere. Right. So that's something like that. Smaller, you know, indie type games, I think we'll see jump on that third party bandwagon. But the big guys, the big publishers, like I said, the only one to me that would kind of make sense would be 2K. I could see them potentially doing something like that. But the other ones that already kind of have this investment into their own online stores on the PC, they're not going to want you to just pick up an Xbox game and be able to play it between the two, because they want you tied into their PC store as well. So Ubisoft, E3, EA, I don't see it. Like Battlefield 1 on Origin on the PC, I don't see them saying, all right, we're just going to do Play Anywhere for that and you can do both. I don't see it. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
Doesn't make sense.
But again, appreciate the voicemail. Keep leaving us voicemails. We really appreciate it. Like I said, you guys know the voicemail number and also SpeakPipe as well if you don't want to dial using the telephone numbers.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Let's move on to an email. All right. And we have this email here from Lauren. And she's saying, hey, guys, it's Lauren from Mississippi. With the new announcement of the Nintendo Switch, I would love to hear if it was everything you expected. My other question is, what happens to the DS? Will this be the end of dedicated handheld gaming and replace it altogether? Nintendo has always been the loner when it comes to handhelds, so in all honesty, I would not be surprised. Poor Vita. Sorry. Thanks for all you guys do. I can't wait to see your new content you may bring us visually in the future. All the love, Lauren. So, Lauren, shout out Destiny. It's an awesome game. But
had to bring it out. Had to mention it. Yeah, once.
I had to. Of course. Just to piss off Danny out there in the woods, allegedly. But no, to answer a question about the Switch, is it everything I expected? Yeah, pretty much. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week. And then as far as she's saying with the DS, I think, is it the end of dedicated handheld gaming? I think that's TBD. I think it really depends on the success of the Switch and how viable it will be as a mobile device. I mean, rumors aside here with the 3-hour battery life, if that's the case, the 1.0 version of the Switch will not replace the 3DS. It just won't. I mean, it will stand on its own. And like I said, I forget, you know, the United States for a minute. I look more at Japan. The DS is a smash hit over in Japan. I don't see Nintendo abandoning that anytime soon and telling that market, you now have to pick up our home console, which, oh, by the way, you can take on the go with you as well. In my opinion, I don't see the DS going away at all, but who knows? We have to wait and see what the pricing is going to be on the Switch and just how it's going to, how viable it's going to be as a mobile device before we'll know.
But right.
Pete, what do you think?
I know. I asked this question on the last show about whether this could be the death knell for the DS. And right after, literally, I think it was the day after we released the show, I think Nintendo had announced that no, it's not going to, they're going to continue production. But as you said, I think Nintendo is probably going to, speculation on my part, this does not reflect the thoughts and beliefs of Paris, Danny, or CBS, or Play.it. I think what Nintendo is going to do is they're going to let the DS production run go for the next 2 or 3 years, but this is going to be what Nintendo does moving forward, the all in one. Now, unfortunately, I think I was reading this morning, allegedly we're talking 3-hour potential battery life.
Yeah,
is that good? Is that good or is that bad? Because I know what the DS.
That's terrible. That's bad. And let's be clear on something. Rumor, because right. Nintendo's not said anything, and I already can tell people are taking a rumor as fact. It's not fact yet. We don't know until Nintendo talks about the Switch again what the true battery life of that device is. If it's 3 hours, that's a problem.
Yeah, I can't see 3 hours. I can't see that as a as something that's going on. And then they haven't even talked price, which is another thing. I know we were all being hopeful and saying 300, 299, maybe 350. But people are starting to say that they would actually, and actually this will probably be a perfect interlude to another message that we got on fan mail from Jules. He says, after really seeing it, do you really think it's worth the possible $299, $399 bundle price? After watching a few videos and thoughts about it, I'm sold. So he also says, I think I'd gladly pay $399 for the Switch, a game and a pro-style controller. That price seems fair. Do you think at a three-hour battery life that it's that a potential $399 price tag could be what we're looking at?
No, I don't think it's $399. If anything, the more I've been reading about it and the more I've been thinking about it, I think $299's high. I think this thing's $250, man. I really,
really
do. Yeah, I really do. I mean, again, we talked about it a little bit last week. Again, you and I both have the Shield.
Right.
You can go get that Shield right now for $199. If you're smart, you can probably get it cheaper than that. Hey, I know I did.
Yeah.
That Tegra processor is the key. It's not, and this is the other point. Someone brought up and it was just like a light bulb went off. The Xbox One S is $299 right now. And we both know it is a more powerful system. It just is, right? More robust features, doing some light 4K stuff, etc. If that's $299, why in the heck would the Switch be $299? Because let's remember, that base device, all it's doing is being the conduit to get it to display on your television. They say it might do some slight up-resing, mm-hmm. but that's not a powerful thing. The Switch lives on that portable screen. That is the Switch. So again, I equate it back to an NVIDIA Shield. That would be like me picking up the portable NVIDIA Shield and telling me I got to spend $400 for it. That's not going to happen. Even $300. It's not going to happen. So if you look at it that way, and it's not like they're bundling in the Pro Controller. That the standard Joy-Con controller that it comes with, mm-hmm. the actual portable system and the base station. I'm to the point now, I think I'd be disappointed if it was $300. I'd still buy it. They got me. I'm going to get it anyways. But if they really want this thing to be mass market, if they really want to push it, $250 makes a lot of sense for them. It really does. And if they want to get back to what made the original Wii a hit, it was the cheap price point, if you remember.
Right.
And then they gambled. And because of that portable controller thing, along with the actual console itself, they had no choice but to price that thing. What was it, like $350 at launch?
Right.
Something crazy like that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see them making that mistake again. $250 makes a lot of sense to me for this because they're not getting into the hardware spec war. They're going back to doing what they do best. And that's just make some kick ass games. You know what I mean? Zelda is going to be a fantastic game. Don't get me wrong, but is it going to be on the level of The Witcher 3 as far as all the everything that goes into it and require these hardcore system specs? No, it's not. Will the next Mario require these hardcore system specs? No, that doesn't matter. It's the franchises and the games that matter and the experiences that they give you. And, you know, we've always been saying this anyways. You know, look, having a hardware powerhouse is great if you can do it, but you're going to pay to do that. That ain't Nintendo. That's not their strategy.
So let's use your Witcher 3 analogy there. And this is the ultimate what if scenario, right? What if you would have gotten The Witcher 3 in a cel-shaded experience from another developer?
No.
Would it have been as much fun or enjoyable for you had it been released on another console or another thing, or was it because it looked so amazing and was such a technical marvel that made it that enjoyable or well-liked?
I would not have been as invested into it if it was a cel-shaded experience because it was that realism, that whole nitty-gritty of it just everything that, that came in that package that could not, for example, could not have been done on a Nintendo Switch because it wouldn't have been powerful enough to pull that off. It would have pulled me out of the experience. You can't try to have this realistic, gritty game. Because look, let's be real here. Just the violence, the action, the language, everything that goes along with The Witcher 3 is what makes it what it is, right? And you put it in this realistic world. That's what makes it, you know, so good. The realistic fantasy world, I should say, which is an oxymoron. But I watch too much Game of Thrones. But Zelda can get away with that because of what Zelda is and what it has been. I mean, Zelda has gone more realistic at times, but then you look at something like Wind Waker, and that's a great game too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Zelda can blend that. And what they're doing with this new one seems to be kind of the perfect blend of both. You know what I mean? It's kind of a Wind Waker meets Ocarina of Time, which I'm all for, and I'm definitely going to play it. But that Zelda's a unique case in that scenario. You know, if Zelda wasn't called Zelda and it was called, I don't know, just some other name, and it was an Xbox game, I don't think it would have the appeal that it does. I think because it's a Nintendo game and it has that name, and we have the decades of experiences with that franchise at that point, they're able to get away with what they're doing with this current game. Whereas it, like I said, if it was a new IP coming on PlayStation or Xbox or even the PC, it would be more of the lines of something like Bastion, if that makes sense.
Right.
Versus what we see it as this big AAA game in Zelda.
It's funny, not to change the subject though, but you say Bastion and I get triggered from Overwatch.
Yeah, it's true.
All right.
So anything else on that?
No. I think we've got a good discussion. I think Switch is probably going to be a topic of conversation for the next couple of weeks until we start getting more information as people start to speculate more and more. And, you know, I think Nintendo's done, they're always, you know, I think they do a better job, let's put it that way, than the other developers or console manufacturers with some information. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to see what Let's Play and what's the other girl that's always dropping information on Nintendo?
Is it Emily?
Emily Rogers? Emily Rogers. Yeah. We're gonna have to wait and see what those two, uncover over the next, 9 months now till the launch of the Switch.
Wait, is it? No, it's not 9 months.
It's March.
Look, I'm using my fingers. October, November, January, February, March.
You forgot December. I just skipped December.
Oh, all right. Six. Hey.
October, November, and January.
That's about 20-year wedding anniversary. I just blanked it out of my mind. I forget about December. But no, I mean, October's halfway done. So really, we're looking at 5 months. Hmm. It's not that far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time to start saving. So cool.
Hey, or do you need to save up? I'm telling you, I think this thing's going to be a lot cheaper than we think.
Wow.
I really do. Which is good. This is a good thing. Because you know you're going to get the quality games from Nintendo no matter how much it costs. Right?
Right.
So the cheaper it is, the more people are going to pick it up.
All right.
So let's do one more email and I had to stress email because I keep saying voicemail. One more email and let's just go ahead and get out of here. So got this one from Craig. He hits us up all the time, but this is a good one to touch on. So he says, "Hey, Gamertag crew, first and foremost, you've been killing it with the content in 2016 and a huge thanks is indeed necessary. So thank you." Well, thank you. "With the PlayStation Pro 2.5 weeks away, I have some memory concerns that I'm hoping you might be able to answer. I currently have a 2 terabyte drive in my white PlayStation 4. The PlayStation Pro comes with a 1 terabyte drive, and as far as I know, you still can't attach an external hard drive via USB. Do you think Sony will allow you to put a larger hard drive in the Pro, and how many terabytes larger will it be? Thank you, your friend Craig." Yes, you can. Just like you can on a PlayStation 4, you can put it in a larger hard drive in a PlayStation 4 Pro. God, that's a lot to say. But yeah, you can put a bigger hard drive in it. How many terabytes? I'm not 100% sure on that. I have to research it. But yeah, you can, if you want to like take your 2 terabyte drive you got in your current PS4 and put it in your Pro, you can do that. That's not an issue.
My question, is, would he be able to swap out the one on his current PS4, put it in his PS4 Pro, and have it boot up and work because it's OS and everything installed. It would just need to do a driver update online.
You got to think, though, you got to think it's going to recognize a different motherboard or a different SoC, right? Mm. So I wonder if it would be able to smartly know that you put it in a new system and keep your data intact. I don't know.
Is on the PS4, and I don't know if, and maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I just haven't done enough research on it. Is the GPU and the CPU built in? Like, are they integrated? Like the same?
Yeah, it's a SoC.
Well,
it's
if that's SoC. The case, all they're doing is SLIing a second SoC. So how would it be any different?
I don't disagree. Look, Sony may work right up the street from me where I work. Shout out to Tom. We still got to go to lunch. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they plan on handling that. I mean, you would think logically, since it is technically just the same system, they've just updated the GPU, put in a second GPU, excuse me. You should be able to do that, but we don't know. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. They've not, because, you know, Mark Cerny has started to open up about it now, talking about just how they're doing some of the 4K rendering and everything. So, I like you said, there's only 2.5 weeks left. So, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more information on this Pro, you know, coming up here soon. So, that'll be an interesting one because, like, for me, example, I mean, I have my current PlayStation 4 and I'm going to sell it once I get the Pro. I'm going to get rid of it. But it'd be nice if I could just swap out the hard. But then again, it's a 500 gigabyte hard drive. I want the terabyte one. Yeah. So no, I wouldn't do that in my scenario. But I could get someone like Craig that already has a 2 terabyte to not have to re-download everything and just swap it over. That would be a nice feature. So we'll have to wait and hear from Sony.
Hopefully,
I don't know.
Hopefully they're listening, right?
Yeah. But they aren't going to answer us.
Shots fired.
Yep. But yeah, thank you, Craig. We appreciate that. And just speaking on Sony in general, PlayStation Experience will be in early December. I'm tentatively planning on attending the first day of it because the second day I'll be down in San Diego doing something with my son. But because it's going to be Anaheim this year, so I'm for sure going to definitely try and make it over.
Nice.
And at least be there for the press briefing and day one stuff. So hopefully we can get some content and secrets, which just that week in general, because we're talking about this up in San Francisco last week. Jeff Keighley's thing, the Video Game Awards, will be 2 days before that. So I'm going to try and attend that as well, because I wanted to attend last year and just scheduling wise, it didn't work out. But want to go to Video Game Awards. And then, like I said, go to PlayStation Experience a couple days after that. So right, first week of December should be a good month. Hopefully we'll get some new info. Again, the Pro will be out at that point. VR will already, have been established. We'll see more games for that. So, hopefully we'll get more Mass Effect. I know, because Mass Effect, November 7th, they're going to have their big reveal. So we should have more information on that. And obviously they showed it off on PS4 Pro. So maybe they'll do more with that at PlayStation Experience as well. But overall, man, I don't know about you, Pete, but I'm kind of feeling overwhelmed with all these games that are coming out right now because, I got to finish hard mode raid for Destiny. And then I'm going to kind of put that on the shelf for a little bit. We literally were playing last night and got to the phase 2 of Axis. So we'll knock that out today. And I'll have hard mode done. And then I'm going to move on to some of the game. I got to get into Battlefield 1. Mm-hmm. Titanfall 2 has obviously come out. I got to finish Gears 4, Call of Duty. Civ 6 is out. I was staring at that in Steam. It was looking at me going, hey, buddy, me and you are going to have some fun later. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm literally have to just dedicate an entire weekend to that. And, my wife's probably going to threaten to divorce me because I'll just be one more turn.
Mafia 3.
3 o'clock in the morning. One more.
Mafia 3.
You know what? I don't think I'm going to play it.
Oh.
I don't think I've never been into that series.
Okay.
And like I said, I shouldn't say never. Not right now. You know what I mean? That'll be something I play later. But there's just I never got into the Mafia series, so I don't have that urge to want to jump into it right now and play. But there's something else coming out too. Oh, duh. Watch Dogs 2 obviously is another one. And then something that we've not been talking about at all, and it's probably going to wind up being a Game of the Year contender, and that's coming out a lot sooner than we think. Dishonored 2.
Oh
my God. Yeah, I haven't even been thinking about that game, but that's coming. That's coming too, and you know it's going to be so good.
Yeah,
because I love the first Dishonored. That was such a great game, man. It's that time of year, man. I just, my wall of shame early 2017 is just going to be sickening, because I'm not going to get to all this stuff. You know, you're just not. There's just too many games, too much time to invest into them to be able to get to everything. So you just got to pick and choose, man.
And I'm not even another. And here's another title. I can't even speak on it because I've never touched a single title in this franchise. Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah. Oh God, that's another one. And yeah, I'm not big into that. So it's not something that I need to run out and play day one. But that's Last Guardian. Oh God. Wow. There's a lot of games. And then it's like, okay, you get past Christmas, January, whatever. February, they're going to start hitting you over the head again. I know Horizon comes out.
Yep.
And there's something else in February I'm not thinking of. There's another big game that comes out in February. Is it Halo Wars? Halo Wars 2. Isn't that February? I think so.
February 27th, I want to say. No, wait. No, something. That was the first one. Was February 27th.
Well, regardless, Halo Wars 2 is early 2017. Horizon is early 2017.
Resident Evil 7. I don't know if a lot of people... Yakuza. I know Sniper Elite 4 is coming out. Persona 5 coming out. Horizon Zero Dawn in February. Halo Wars 2, you're right. It is the 21st.
Yeah.
Ghost Recon Wildlands, March 7th.
Oh, my God. Then Mass Effect. Even though I haven't said the date yet, we know that's coming in March. Sniper Ghost Warrior,
Bard's Tale, Shenmue.
There's a lot of stuff. Good. Hey, it is a fantastic time to be a gamer. I don't give a crap what platform, what your loyalty may be. There's going to be something for you to play over these next... Hey, I'll put December into it too. Over these next 5 months.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of games. Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, and then not to mention the Switch comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With Zelda and probably a Mario and all that stuff too. So from right now until March 31st, we're just going to be beaten over the head with some quality games. This is an exciting time. It's a really good time. And then once we get past all that, it'll be E3. Scorpion will be out. We'll be talking about that. It'll probably show off God of War again. And we're going to get all this other secret stuff that we don't even know about. And then rinse and repeat. Let's do it all over again.
Oddworld. Red Dead Redemption 2, which just, you know,
yeah,
lit the world on fire.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Phantom Dust, maybe. That's for Danny.
Yeah, that's for Danny. Hold your breath, Danny. Which, by the way, Aaron Greenberg, Albert Pinello, we need to get those guys on here because we need to talk about the Scorpion. I got to say Scorpion to them and see what they say. I'm so curious.
Scorpion.
But yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this up and get out of here. So Danny, once again, let everybody know how they can leave us some feedback.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
Thank you, Danny. Obviously, his LTE is working in the Everglades. Maybe Gentle Ben hooked him up. I don't know. But thank you, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. You know, keep downloading the show, keep leaving us feedback. We appreciate all that. And, you know, Lauren in her email hinted at it. I have an idea now for what I want to do via Twitch and YouTube. I have a pretty good idea how I'm going to handle it, what I want to do, probably thinking about something that'll happen maybe once a week, twice a month. I obviously have to see feedback and just how it goes. But, you know, I want to do some, like we talk about a lot of these hardware products that we review, give you guys a visual now when we unbox them so you can see what we're looking at, talking about things like that. I want to do something just visually streaming since I'm always playing Destiny and stuff like that with my son. It'd be nice to kind of share those conversations. Hey, look, the conversations with my son, some of the other late night conversations, maybe I don't stream those so much.
No, you don't want to do that. You have to rate R those.
Oh my God. But just some stuff like that. Just stream some games every now and again, you know, just kind of get some audience participation on that. And then because I've had some people reach out to me that are already into the streaming and YouTube verse that give me some hints on a type of equipment to get, you know, editing software, etc. And I could even seeing eventually getting it to the point where, hey, you know, have some guests on, do it via video, talk about stuff like that, you know, not drawn out like an hour like we do here in GTR, but little 15, 20 minute chunks, have conversations, talk about stuff. It'll be fun. Hopefully I'll get this going probably post October, before the end of the year, but for sure by the beginning of 2017. I want to get this done. I actually technically really have a lot of the equipment I need already. So I just need to fine tune some things, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to step out of my comfort zone. I'm going to do it. That's why I keep talking about it. Cause the more I talk about it, the more it means I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you mean something like 15, 20 minute chunks? Like what's his Austin, the guy that we met at E3, the wrestler.
He does
video game stuff with WWE.
Yeah. Xavier Woods from New Day.
Wait, why did I say Austin?
No, because that's his real name. Austin Walker?
Okay.
No. What's his name? I forget. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
something like that. Like 15, 20 minutes playing like video games while you're hanging out. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
something like that. Yeah. So it should be fun. Just something to supplement what we do on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Just kind of give people a visual. And like I said, just again, being at a Watch Dogs 2 event, actually going to YouTube and talking to people at YouTube. It's something I want to do for sure. You know, it's funny how I mentioned that on the podcast last week. And then I go to that event. It goes to show you people listen to us on the show because I had people approach me about it at the event. Dude, you got to do it. You got to do it. Do video, man. You got to do it. Show off the biceps on screen. Do it. You know, just stuff like that. So it'll be fun. And like I said, it's out of my comfort zone. It's something I've never really done, you know, before, but it'll be fun. I'm sure it'll be bumps along the way, but the only way you'll get better is to actually do it.
And by the way, Austin Walker's the guy at Giant Bomb, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's why I was like, wait, you know, actually
sorry,
he's now,
gaming. He's not, a, he, not
yeah, which is now they changed the name of that to Waypoint. Now that's their name now.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Doesn't that, your Austin Creed is Xavier Woods. Austin Walker's advice slash, but doesn't that have some kind of a legal video game mixed up with Halo?
Well, obviously they were legally able to do it, so it must not be. Yeah.
All right, well, this show,
but yeah,
this
him
show
and Patrick clip it.
Here we go.
Yeah, I blame you. So let's go ahead and get out of here. And I'm sure Danny is pulling his hair out now, you know, trying to edit this. But again, thank you guys for listening. This has been episode 609 of Gamertag Radio. I'm Paris. That's Pete. Danny will be back next week. See you guys soon.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.